Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Roundtable Sports Podcast. This episode is a solo episode. I am your host, John Newman. Today, we're going to tackle some college football. We're going to take down some MMA, some UFC. We're going to talk a little bit of shit on a certain college football coach that I don't like, and now he's at LSU, and I really don't like. We'll talk a little baseball injury news. From my guy Benintendi, T's and P's. Andrew Benintendi ends up on the disabled list here for 10 days. Looks like it's going to require surgery for the New York Yankees. Was a Royals All-Star this year at the break. Was traded pre-trade deadline. And so T's and P's there. We will probably not talk any further on that as not much is going to be known. Like I said, UFC Paris this past weekend. Today is September 4th, Sunday, after the fight. I got to see some of Robert Whittaker's interview. And let me say, every time this man speaks, it's awesome to hear what he has to say because he's been doing it for so long. And his perspective on the sport, I think, means so much coming from where he comes from. Kind of, you know, guys like Tai Tuivasa maybe don't get a shot without him. And even guys like Israel Adesanya maybe don't get a shot without guys like Robert Whittaker. So we have Ciryl Gane versus Tai Tuivasa in the main event. I think both of those men's prospect is going to rise there. You got 32-year-old Ciryl Gane. He is now 11-1 in mixed martial arts. And then you have Tai Tuivasa on the other side. He's only 29. He has a record in boxing, a record in kickboxing. Looked really sharp early on against Ciryl Gane. But Ciryl was able to land a lot of body shots. It looked like those were what was doing Tai in for most of the fight. I say both of their prospects rise because Tuivasa was able to still land that leg kick effectively a few times and also get his hands on him and wobble Ciryl at a certain point. But Bongaman, good kid, was able to get the job done and the 32-year-old punishing heavyweight is probably going to be looking for a rematch with champion Francis Ngannou. He took him 5 rounds last time. Anytime you can go 5 rounds with the champion, especially at the heavyweight division, and then you take on a challenger like Tuivasa like that, you certainly make a case for another title shot right then and there. For Tuivasa, I didn't listen to him in the post-fight presser yet, but I'm sure he's just looking probably to fight again before the end of the year, maybe take some time off. It is getting sort of late in the year for guys to take a fight camp and be around their family for the holidays, and that's something that maybe some of the younger fighters are going to step up that don't have families, don't have maybe those responsibilities. Hopefully guys like Hooper and some of the younger guys without families. I was going to say O'Malley's name, but now you got to look. He's got a family now, so he's got to look out for that. He's got his family. I'll touch on O'Malley here because I haven't. Kind of surprised me how tough he has been, how he has came back from injury and really looked phenomenal. We still want to see, you know, that really, really solid W next to his name. Maybe he gets back in there before the end of the year. But I'm going to stop and look up, see if those guys will be fighting. If you're asking yourself right now, why are we talking about them when they had nothing to do with UFC Paris? It's just because the MMA conversation tends to always go back to these guys. I don't know why. So the 22-year-old Chase Hooper, he's set to fight October 29th against Steve Garcia at UFC Fight Night 213. then need to look up for this Sean O'Malley, his next fight, see if he is scheduled to fight anybody. I feel like I saw... Oh, yeah, yeah, of course, of course. We literally talked about this at the smoke shop like a week back, like the last time I was in there picking some shit up. We have fucking Peter Yan taking on Sean O'Malley. This is a fucking crazy matchup. Excuse my language to my family that listens to this. They don't care. They curse as well. But this is going to be fucking nuts. These guys are... Sean O'Malley, he has some of the most vicious knockouts at the bantamweight level that I've seen. He's tall and rangy, something that like you don't get with these little guys. Most of them are wrestlers. Peter Yan is like exactly that, like a prototypical wrestler. He's kind of found his hands recently, and he's might walk himself into some trouble going up against Peter Yan. He might walk himself into some trouble going up against O'Malley. I don't know. That's a money off for me. I can't pick on that one. But yeah, so that's coming up. I'm glad we got some hype to that right now, because the co-main event on UFC Paris, Robert Whittaker, he's already fought Adesanya twice and lost twice. He was knocked out the first time. The second time they fought was a very close decision. Kind of came out to a slow start against Marvin Vittori. He said in his post-fight press conference, I gauged his pace, controlled it, and then worked out his range. And that is how he won the fight. I mean, then after the first round, he really had him figured out, pieced him up. If that fight was a five-round co-main, he probably ends up knocking him out. But, yeah. He said, when you give everything to the camp and the coaches give everything to the camp, you have to fight. And he's just saying that just to motivate the division, motivate some competitors to come out before the end of the year, like I was saying, with that time crunch, with everybody wanting to be off for the holidays and whatnot. But the show, Dana White, of course, the show must go on for the UFC. Another thing Robert Whittaker said, he said, I'm a fiend for progress. He said, I think I'm the most dangerous man in the division. Hats off to Israel for beating me twice, but I'm more dangerous. Yeah, something along those lines. And you can definitely make the argument for that. Robert Whittaker was put away by Israel Adesanya once, though. So, yeah, building hype for a possible rematch and a third fight. I know a lot of people are over that one, but I'm still not over that one. I think a lot of people would like to see it still. I don't know. Robert Whittaker has talked about moving up to 205, which Jiří Procházka just won the championship belt off of Glover Teixeira. That was kind of a surprising, you know, rise to the belt there for Jiří. I know he has tons of fans internationally and a lot of acclaim. So does Robert Whittaker, and that's kind of a matchup that would make sense. I don't know if Whittaker jumps the line immediately, but he is a little on the small side if he were to go up to 205. He's only 5 feet, 11 inches in height. But, you know, he would what he gives up there, he can make up for in cage time and experience in title fights. And I think that division is Błachowicz's whenever he decides to return. Then you've got, of course, Magomed Ankalaev and Alexander Rakic, who are problems for pretty much anybody. Then you talk Anthony Smith is in fifth place in the light heavyweight division. And then that's somebody who, you know, like he takes on all comers. Robert Whittaker wants to move up. That's a huge size difference there. And, you know, Smith would be game for that. So just kind of prospecting out, I think he doesn't take on anybody at 205 that's not in the top five. It just wouldn't make too much sense for him or for the UFC if Robert Whittaker is moving up to 205 for him to not take on the best of the best in the division. That's just prospecting out Robert the Reaper Whittaker there, and what's going to happen after him, after he's able to get back into the win column here at UFC Paris. So let's start from bottom to top. We had Stephanie Egger beat Aylin Perez. Stephanie Egger out of Switzerland beating the Argentinian. The Argentinian said she would twerk if she won. She twerked at the weigh-ins, whatever. Who really cares? Let's focus on the fight and what happened there. She got subbed by the better woman. The matchmakers agreed with that going into the fight. Perez was a 225 underdog. I don't really know anybody that laid on that. We have Christian Quinones winning by a spectacular knockout there over Khalid Taha in his opening debut from Mexico, taking on Khalid fighting out of Germany. Then in the third matchup, it was a 155-pound lightweight matchup, kind of more, like the crowd, you know, they know Benoit Saint-Denis. He's the first Frenchman on the card. He was able to start the night off right for them, earning the knockout victory over Gabriel Miranda. Firas Ziam won by a unanimous decision. He was also representing the French flag, and I believe fighting out of Paris for this fight. Then it was Nasrat Haqparast versus John McDessie. This was the first one that I wanted to go against the crowd on, and it was right because Nasrat was able to control most of the fight, and he was able to come out victorious in that one. Then the featured prelim was between Dustin Stolzfus, the American, versus Abus Magomedov. I thought Abus was going to – I thought he was going to win. So you can check it on Twitter right now. I had him circled, Abus. I had Magomedov over Stolzfus, who was a plus 245 underdog. But that was kind of one of my more locked-in picks there was that featured prelim. And it was a first-round finish, a knockout for – Magomedov. I don't want to draw too much attention to it because I don't know the verify, like I don't know how to verify the story or not, but Abus was representing it looked like the German flag for this pay-per-view. I don't know if that has anything to do with what's going on in Russia and Ukraine right now. But it is something that kind of touches the heart to see somebody who has defected from a nation that's doing the things that they're doing to their neighbors in Ukraine, and they've defected to a more westernized nation and a more freer society, and they're still at the top of their game. Competing and defeating an American in this sport. So it's nice to see that for Abus Magomedov. And great job there getting the win in the featured prelim. So that rolled us into our main card that was kicked off with a couple of featherweight matchups. The first one being Charles Air Jourdain taking on Nathaniel Wood. and Nathaniel Wood out of the UK. He was able to defy the odds. He was a little bit of an underdog coming into this one, and he got the best of him over three rounds, earned the decision victory. There was a little bit of controversy. Some people thought Charles won on the timeline. I did see, but whenever we bring up some of the statistics here, you got Nathaniel Wood landing five takedowns, and the count 97-86 on the significant strikes there. You can decide for yourself. I think the judges got it right on Nathaniel Wood. Next fight featured the first Frenchman on the main card, William Gomez, making his debut. William Gomez taking on Jarno Arens, who was also making his debut out of the Netherlands, I believe. It was also his debut. Gomez controls the fight, 69 total strikes to 31 total strikes, landed 3 out of 5 takedown attempts, stuffed 2 of them from his opponent. while they were on the ground, Jarno Arens did attempt a submission, but wasn't able to lock anything up. And then in the significant strike department, which is usually the big teller, 32-20, William Gomez walked away. I think in the immediate aftermath said he wasn't too impressed by himself, but was happy to be there in front of the home crowd and whatnot. I don't speak any French, and the translator was a new guy, and hard to really tell what was being said at the moment in the moment. Moving on, though, congratulations to William Gomez. He lit a fire in that crowd after becoming the first Frenchman victorious. We had the first fight that ended early, ended because of stoppage, a knockout for Roman Kopylov over Alessio Di Chirico, who a lot of people thought that Alessio Di Chirico was going to win this matchup. Both of these fighters had, you would have to bet 105 to win 100. You would have to bet 115 to win 100 on the Kopylov side, 105 to win 100 on the Di Chirico side. So not really a smart fight to bet on unless you had extensive knowledge in the game plans and what was going to happen in this. Kopylov was able to outstrike him at 59-39 in the significant strikes department, knocked him down once as well. Didn't go for any takedowns of his own, and stuffed 4 of Alessio's takedowns and was able to put him away. 109 mark in the third round. So Roman Kopylov, a prospect to watch at the 185-pound level there. All the Russian fighters are just tremendous and of a different level when it comes to the technique, the skill, the discipline. They are multi-level talents. So we have another matchup involving a Russian fighter, and Nasruddin Imavov is taking on Joaquin Buckley. Joaquin Buckley. Buckley, he's coming off of the big head kick knockout in his last fight. I forgot who it was against. Nonetheless, this one went about how Vegas thought it would go. Kind of an ass whooping for Nasruddin coming into this thing. A +200 underdog was Buckley. And this is one that I probably would have put more towards the lock side if I was betting on this card. This is all in hindsight, so, you know, like, it doesn't mean anything now. So I might as well just save the breath and just stop talking about it. But Imavov gets the victory, gets the decision, 68-55 and total strikes. But you look at the significant strikes, it still favors Nasruddin. Buckley was 0-for-3 on his takedown attempts, while Nasruddin is 2-of-7. And Nasruddin Imavov, of course, victorious there. Moving to our co-main event, we talked about it at length. Kind of talk about how it went down round by round. The first round was quite the feeling out process. Looked like Vettori was going to have, was going to be able to match the pace. But Robert Whittaker was able to keep him at range. He said as much. That was kind of the game plan. Round two picks up, and then round three, he just really stays strong in terms of keeping the pressure on his opponent and keeping them at a disadvantage in terms of their positioning in the cage and how they can hurt him and how he can hurt them. You know, it's always the balance seems to always be tipped in his favor, unless he's fighting Israel Adesanya, and those are two guys whose styles match up for fireworks, kind of like how Cyril Gane and Tai Tuivasa produced some fireworks. I know Tai didn't land close to as many shots, but the ones that he did land were powerful. He was a +430 underdog warrior for stepping in there, taking a fight against the number one ranked guy in the division. Granted, Tuivasa's getting up there in the rankings because he has beaten a litany of good fighters, including Derek Lewis. In his last outing, he beat Derek by knockout, and he was on a 5-fight winning streak, all via KO. Which was impressive. The first round is where, the significant strikes were 16-6. They're heavyweight, so basically all the strikes they throw are significant, according to the analysis. I think the metric for it is it's a certain velocity, which is speed and mass. So they, have it as, 16-6 in the first round for Gane. They have 41-15 for Gane in the second round, and then in the third round before putting them away, 53-8. It just felt a lot closer than what the statistics would show. Because Tuivasa did land a couple of leg kicks. I don't want to harp on that, but that was a big weapon in terms of setting up some of the guys that he did set up. He kind of did the thing where he fainted, tried to do the Anderson Spider thing. Didn't work out for him. I know we talked about this towards the beginning, so we'll move on from that to what we have coming up. This coming weekend is UFC Fight Night. UFC Fight Night. Where are we at this weekend? UFC 279. I don't know how I missed that being so fast. I mean, it all did come so fast. Nate Diaz versus Khamzat Chimaev. It's like this thing came together, and next thing you know, Tony Ferguson is on to fight Li Jingliang, making a welterweight jump from 155 to 170. We'll see for Tony there. I will definitely be rooting my damn heart out for Tony Ferguson to beat Li Jingliang. We got Kevin Holland and Daniel Rodriguez at a catchweight bout. Big Mouth getting some action there against Danny Rodriguez. Irene Aldana taking Macy Chiesion on, and Johnny Walker and Ion Cutabella. That is the UFC 279 main card. We will be streaming that thing. Hakeem Dawodu versus Julian Arosa. Shamil Abdur Akhimov versus Jailton Almeida. Dennis Tui Uwin, I don't know how to say that, versus Jamie Pickett, Jake Collier versus Chris Barnett. Prelims, okay? And then early prelims now, Norma Dumont taking on Daniel Wolf. Chad Ehlinger taking on Alatengeli. That's all we got for a name on him. Okay. I think he might be Thai, so that makes sense, I think. I can't tell from this picture at all. Melissa Martinez versus Elise Reed, Darian Weeks versus Johan Lines. I'm telling you, UFC Paris was a much, much better card top to bottom than what we have for UFC 279. We just have a Nate Diaz fight, a Tony Ferguson fight. We have Big Mouth Kevin Holland fighting. We have Irene Aldana taking on Macy Chiazion and Johnny Walker, who's been a prospect in the light heavyweight division with a name, looking to kind of bounce back against a guy in Ion Cutabella, who I think personally he's got to have something to prove here. Yeah. With him getting submitted by Ryan Spann, Ion Cutabella definitely does have something to prove there, especially against a guy like Johnny Walker. I'm going to be taking Ion in that one. But no slouch on the feet is Johnny Walker. We always know that. Kind of is that Greco-Roman judo sambo style susceptible for somebody who can kick like Johnny can. We'll see what happens with that one. That's one that I'm going to be watching pretty closely next Saturday. We also have, I wanted to roll into college football. Kevin Holland news. Apparently he got some cuffs slapped on him for some traffic violations or something over this weekend, and he is done playing superhero. So, I guess it makes sense why he'd want to be done with that anyways, putting himself in danger for other people. Commendable, respectable, a lot of the things that he's done. After the police start to treat you bad there in Texas, you're done helping them out, helping them do their job. Because now, I mean, they're obviously just collecting revenue from you. And, let's roll into the college football slate that we had over this past weekend. We had Notre Dame taking on Ohio, two top five squads, and number five Notre Dame looked like they were going to compete. They were up 10-3 at the half over the Ohio State Buckeyes, but Buckeyes charged back with two touchdowns they were up 10-7 at halftime, I should say. Notre Dame was. Buckeyes charged back after halftime to win in that contest 21-10, held the Buckeyes off the board, or held the Fighting Irish off the Buckeyes, held the Fighting Irish off the board in the second half. And yesterday's featured college football matchup right now on the TV, we have just entered halftime on the Florida State and LSU game. Florida State was up 7-3, I think it was 7-3, over Louisiana State University, coached by Brian Kelly, who is a giant piece of shit. Holding a practice in the conditions that allowed that one dude to die in. Just overall, I don't know why LSU decided to go with Brian fucking Kelly over some of the guys that they could have hired. But is LSU really that nice of a school that you wanna be coaching at, is what you gotta say. You've got to go up against and compete against Nick Saban in Alabama for years and years to come, because that guy seems to sign a new contract after every season that it continues to extend his stay in Tuscaloosa. My Missouri Tiger squad played on Thursday. I listened to Mike Kelly, the voice of the Tigers, call in Luther Burden's touchdowns. That was very, very nice. Got to hear Gary Pinkle come on to the broadcast booth and talk with Mike for a little bit as well. Mike Kelly, longtime voice of the Missouri Tigers. We don't know how much longer he's going to be doing it there, but the Missouri always does it right. It was just another game for him, and good showing from offense and defense. They gave up a late touchdown towards the end of the game against Louisiana Tech. Louisiana Tech, a program not really, I mean, they're still NCAA, they're still Division I. They're not FCS like Tennessee Tech is. Kansas is playing. But we got Kansas State in the first challenge of the season coming up before Appalachian State. Mizzou schedule is not burned in my brain quite yet. I forget if it's because I hear the advertisements on the radio. Yeah, no, it's next Saturday. We're playing Kansas State at Bill Snyder Family Stadium. Should be interesting. Everybody in Manhattan will be locked and set on that game. Manhattan, Kansas, where the Wildcats roam. I think Missouri Tigers should be able to go out there, put up some points on the board, and know what they're getting into and stopping a Kansas State squad that probably running same shit they've been running since Bill Snyder. I don't know. So my depth and knowledge on what Kansas State is scheming up this year, don't hate on me. Don't fault me for not knowing what they're doing out there. But I think we should have that one as a winnable game. As Missouri fans, we should see that as a winnable game. I think Kansas State, they're always competitive in the Big 12, but we look to other Big 12 schools in action this weekend already. We had Oklahoma State take on Central Michigan. They put up 58 points, but it was 58-44, a lot closer game there on Thursday. Pittsburgh took down West Virginia. Pittsburgh, they're 17th. They're ranked 17th in the country. West Virginia, the Big 12 school, goes down there. I think that's where Kansas is headed. So the Jayhawks will be headed to Charlestown, West Virginia. I forget which one it is, to take on the Mountaineers soon, if it's not next weekend, because we were just talking about that at my friend's house, who met some West Virginia fans at the Big 12 tournament this past year for their college basketball tournament. What else do we got? Arkansas and Cincinnati. Arkansas was able to take Cincinnati down. Cincinnati was a team that made the college football playoffs last year, but Desmond Ridder no longer there. So Arkansas looks impressive. 31-24 victory. Ranked 19, taking on another top 25 school. Props to them for scheduling an opponent that's tough this early in the season. Georgia took down Oregon 49-3. They stomped the shit out of them. Georgia looks like the same old Georgia. Oregon, Pac-12. Where is it going? The USC and UCLA, they're gone. With Oregon losing like this, where is the competitors? Florida able to come back against Utah in stellar fashion. Richardson is something there. Over 100 yards on the ground, 3 touchdowns rushing. A system and a scheme that's reminded me a little bit of Tim Tebow, a little bit of Tim Tebow there. Not quite the arm, not quite the college arm and one read, one first, second read options that Tebow had either. But got some guys still. If you're Florida, you got to be kind of excited there. that's what I had for college football. That's basically the big news. I think I touched on that Notre Dame and Ohio State game. Looked like Notre Dame was going to hang with them. Couldn't do it. So, yeah. Looks like college football is going to be Alabama is going to be tough. Georgia is going to be tough. Ohio State. And then, I don't know. The next toughest squad could be Florida. The next toughest squad could be Clemson. They're yet to play. We got Arkansas is a pretty good football team this year. Florida State is, I mean, they're not anything special from what I've seen going against LSU right now. But I don't know. I don't think either of the teams that I'm watching here for this kickoff game are that special. We will see. A lot is on the table still for the college football season. We got week one NFL action to talk about, so we will transition to that. Week one of the NFL 2022. So, yeah. It all starts off on Thursday night, September 8th, 7:20 Central Standard Time, Bills versus Rams. Rams are the defending Super Bowl champions, get to play at home versus the defending AFC North champions, the Buffalo Bills. And unless I'm mistaken there, and the Patriots, who started off 0-6 last season, still somehow managed to win the division, which I don't think they did. I think they got in by the wild card to the playoffs last year. Yeah. Bills still won the division last year. Rams, of course, won the whole damn thing last year. The situation with Aaron Donald, the helmet, I think it'd be soft for him to get suspended over an incident at practice. It's the NFL's fault for holding a joint practice between two teams in which an incident like that could occur, where he could take his helmet off and beat the opposing team's player over the fucking head with it. Stupid, really stupid thing that he did. Should he be disciplined, it would have to be by the team, unless they want to lose a game or any games. They're not going to do that, so I don't think there's any worry about Aaron Donald missing this one for the Rams there. We also have the Eagles versus the Lions. The Lions this year, they're going to still have Jared Goff at quarterback. Taking on the Eagles, Jalen Hurts, Devontae Smith, year two. Under coach Nick Sirianni, I think, you know, you got MCDC versus Nick Sirianni. It's the Pat McAfee show, former guests during the pandemic. These guys like to call in, like to talk about shit that was happening in the league, keep us updated. Got commendable guys, both of them are. I think they just both took over too tough of situations and what has been the Philadelphia Eagles since, you know, Carson's injury, and they got quite lucky with Nick Foles and how he was able to be how he was able to perform in the playoffs. They've been very, very misfortunate since then. They've been dumb, made some dumb decisions. Doug Peterson as their coach was not working out for them. They decided to transition, like I said, to Sirianni. Then you got MCDC, Motor City Dan Campbell, coaching the Detroit Lions. He's going to have them boys fired up. Let me tell you something. He's going to have them real fired up, guys. And then Nick Sirianni he's going to be making sure the boys are getting that D'Alessandro's cheesesteak on after the game. I'm going to pick the Eagles to win that one. Let me get a pick for that Thursday night football opener. I'm going to say close matchup. Josh Allen and the Bills somehow scrape out a victory over the defending Super Bowl champions there, week one. I'm going to pick the Eagles over the Lions, though, here starting our September 11th home opening or home opening fucking September 11th NFL opening slate. We have, like I said, that game. Then also at noon, we have 49ers Bears, Steelers Bengals, Patriots Dolphins, Browns Panthers, Colts Texans, Saints Falcons. Still at noon, Ravens Jets, Jags Commanders. This is what happens when all 32 teams plays. All of those teams are playing at noon. And then we have our 3:25, our afternoon slate for September 11th. Sunday is Packers Vikings, Giants Titans, Raiders Chargers, Chiefs Cardinals. Chiefs Cardinals, man. That's the one that you want on your TV. Packers Vikings is also always pretty good. Giants and Titans going to be maybe a little bit closer than people expect. And then Raiders Chargers is going to be the one that's all it's going to be the one that's up on TV too for me, being a Chiefs fan, have to have the AFC West on the other screen. Former Tennessee offensive coordinator Arthur Smith is the new Falcons head coach. So the new Falcons head coach, Arthur Smith, taking on new Saints head coach. On the tip of my tongue, I can't think of it without looking it up. It's Dennis Allen. He's been the long time defensive coordinator, I think, with Sean Payton, but had a stint as a Raiders head coach as well. So I think Dennis Allen, that's a pretty solid coach. Jameis Winston at quarterback versus Mariota at quarterback. Jameis is going to get the job done on opening week. Ravens Jets, and that one everybody should be on the side of the Ravens. I don't think the Jets are going to have anything different. I mean, they got Zach Wilson. He's injured right now, I believe. So they're kind of in a really, really piss poor situation, even for the Jets to be in at the start of this season. Lamar Jackson, John Harbaugh, Ravens probably going to cakewalk the Jets. Jaguars versus Commanders. That's the last. Excuse me. Just had a cheeseburger. Had a belch right there. Jaguars versus Commanders are the last noon game there. Carson Wentz, new quarterback for the Washington Commanders. Washington Commanders' first season as the Commanders after being the football team for a couple of years there, after dropping their old awful name that we won't mention on this podcast. I think Trevor Lawrence takes a big step forward in year two. I've been a fan of this guy for a long time. I think he takes a step forward. I think the Jaguars take a step forward. They've got a pretty solid backfield with James Robinson, and I think ETN is in their backfield as well. I don't quote me on that. I've just drafted my team the other night and have not looked at all of the options for, daily fantasy or things like that yet this season. I'm going to take the Jaguars week one over the Commanders. Moving on to the Packers-Vikings, which is always an interesting game, always closely match up. Got Kirk versus Aaron again. Aaron Rodgers, he owns the last two MVP trophies. Doesn't have a lot to show for it in the playoffs. Went on the Joe Rogan show with him the other day. That was pretty cool. This dude won me the biggest bet I've ever won, so I'm very biased towards the Packers and Aaron Rodgers. I bet him to win the MVP the first time he did it, whenever there was names like Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes. There was, I don't know who else was higher, but probably Josh Allen and I forget, probably Derek Carr was higher. I don't know. But there was a lot of names higher than Aaron Rodgers at the time that I placed the bet. It was like probably mid-September. And I had to wait until, of course, that he won the MVP award at the NFL Honors Night and whatever. And I had to wait all the way until it was officially official to see that thing paid out. And it was the first time I got paid out for an online bet also. It was like, I don't know, I turned probably, I had one sports book, I had like 5 to win 200, then the other one was like 10 to win like 800, because like it was boosted odds somehow as well. And it was just a nice hit. It was like an $850 check from from one bet that was only like a $12 wager. So, that's another personal anecdote that nobody really cares about. Packers taking on the Vikings. Packers are going to get the job done week one. Hopefully they're another game I wouldn't bet because of the heart stakes, and that, you know, can't bet with your heart. You know, you gotta separate your loyalties when you're betting. Giants versus Titans is the next game in the mid afternoon. On the grid sheet here, I think the Titans win this one. Titans, AFC typically stronger than the NFC. In these sorts of matchups of the lower tier teams, I'm going to take the Titans in that one. Then you got the Raiders and Chargers, two AFC West rivals. The Las Vegas Raiders, man, they added Davante Adams, but then you go to the Los Angeles Chargers, they added, I believe, J.C. Jackson to the secondary. And that guy was a beast for the Patriots last year. Those two teams, they got better in the AFC West. Sucks to say for them, though. I think the Kansas City Chiefs managed to get better also, and I'll explain why here towards the end. I picked the Titans over there. All right, yeah. We'll pick the pick Justin Herbert and the Chargers in this one, because Derek Carr and Davante Adams, they're going to have a connection, but it's not going to be their week one just quite yet, I don't think. Meanwhile, on the other side, the Chargers, they have Eckler in the run game that, oh, I mean, I guess the Raiders have Josh Jacobs in the run game as well. Then you look, you got Darren Waller, you got more weapons on the Raiders. This is a tough one. Picking AFC West rivals here, I still think somehow Justin Herbert has the it factor, gets it done. Chargers get it done. They're 1-0 going into Arrowhead for Thursday Night Football. Meanwhile, the Chiefs are taking on the Arizona Cardinals. To start the season, this is a tough matchup. The Arizona Cardinals, Cliff Kingsbury is their head coach. He's an offensive-minded head coach, much like Andy Reid, but he runs an air raid. Andy Reid likes to run the West Coast, but we've adopted some of Kingsbury's things. If Kingsbury doesn't kind of adopt some of Andy Reid's tendencies, he might be short for the league. because the talent that is put around his squad right now, he is expected to win with right now. And down the stretch of seasons, they've withered away. Had the Cardinals. Now they're a tough out, and especially this early in the season. Kyler Murray just got a new contract. He got made fun of for some of the clauses in the contract. Arizona went and rescinded those clauses and said, here's your new contract without those same clauses. And now everybody's happy. He's not getting made fun of, whatever. Super sensitive bullshit that he probably should have those requirements. If he wasn't watching film, he probably should have something in his contract requiring him to watch film, but that's neither here nor there. That's another debate. Because I mean, you're the starting quarterback. You shouldn't be have to be told to watch film on your opponents. I think my Kansas City Chiefs now, they're going to be captained by Nick Bolton, rocking the 32, the number he wore at Mizzou. So, you know, Nick Bolton, he's a guy that, you know, coming in to the NFL, I thought, you know, the Chiefs should target him just because he played at Missouri. And then whenever they did and they went after him, and he played kind of above what his expectations were. Then I started to really, really come around on him. I wanted to, you know, pace myself in the hyping of what he is. But I've explained it this way before. You know, having the guy with the dot on defense playing in the middle of the field is much better than having the guy with the dot playing safety or playing nickelback like Tyrann Mathieu was. Because there's certain times your guy with your dot is not visible, not easily visible to all the other players. Not like the middle linebacker position is that Nick Bolton plays. So it's going to help, I think, the defense a lot there. And then you got a guy, you're replacing him with in Justin Reed, who's kind of a proven safety. He's played for the Houston Texans. He was incredible in other ways than just coming up and ripping the ball and doing honey badger like shit like Tyrann did. I think overall, you know, you add George Karloftis, Carlos Dunlap. Man, there's going to be some improvements, I think, defensively for the Chiefs. We should watch for, and maybe we should see them as early as Week One against as tough as an offense as Arizona is. So Kansas City, my pick, and that one, of course. So Sunday Night Football, 7:20. This is the Sunday night game. I believe NBC still carrying the rights for Sunday Night Football, Buccaneers and Cowboys. The Collinsworth and Michaels booth is gone now. I think we got different guys for this, which is exciting. We've been calling for that one for a while. Bucks, Cowboys. So Tom Brady took 2-week hiatus, like at the end, right there at the end of training camp. I've been rolling for a minute. I'm going to take a break and regain some stamina. It'll be Mike Tirico in the booth with Chris Collinsworth instead of Al Michaels. You know, Al did it for so many years, and he did such a great job with it. But at the end, man, at the end of the day, I think even he said it was kind of time for him to give that seat up, and Mike Tirico's taken over there. It should be a pretty good, nice, even broadcast there. I'll get into the Chiefs offensive additions for the rest of my listeners that are from Chiefs Kingdom after I get through this Sunday night football game and then the Monday night game. between the Broncos and the Seahawks. So for the Sunday night game, the Buccaneers taking on the Cowboys. The Cowboys just recently found out that they're going to be without Tyron Smith for a large portion of this season. He is their Pro Bowl All-Pro left tackle, one of the best pass protectors in the game, protecting the blind side for Dak Prescott there. It's going to open up opportunities for the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers are going to be under Todd Bowles, who it's not his first rodeo as a head coach, but he's getting another chance down there in Tampa Bay with Tom Brady basically being the commander of the offense, you know, without Rob Gronkowski this season. There's going to be, you know, a lot of question marks for Tampa Bay as well as question marks for Dallas. I don't really know how to predict this one either way. I think Tampa Bay, you know, since they went deeper last year, kind of tells me that they might be the deeper squad. I know the Cowboys had some youth on defense, Leighton Vander Esch, Micah Parsons, guys like that, that are looking to take, even, you know, Vander Esch looking to stay healthy, and Micah Parsons looking to take a step forward, you know, in terms of what he can do to be more he's a dynamic player as an athlete. Can he be, you know, a scheme fit, dependent 3 to 4 down player when you need him? Then you've got, you know, on the Tampa Bay side of things, last season, where did they finish in the postseason last year? The Buccaneers win in the wild card round. They lose in the divisional round to the eventual Super Bowl champs, the LA Rams. It was kind of an easy matchup there in the wild card round against the Eagles for the Buccaneers, though, let's face it. And then the 49ers, that's a tough matchup for the wild card round for the Cowboys. The 49ers got the best of them, and they were one and done. They didn't win, so they didn't advance or anything in the postseason. I don't think that has any bearing on this season because, let's face it, the coach and the quarterback at a certain point retired. Then Tom, of course, unretires. Bruce isn't coming back, though. The team is Todd Bowles as the coach. And then you have, on the flip side, the Cowboys, second year under Mike McCarthy, who I think that, you know, he's on the hot seat. A lot of people think he's on the hot seat going in to this season. It's kind of put up or shut up time. He was brought there to win in the playoffs with some playoff winning experience in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback. I think kind of wasted Aaron's career a little bit. Stuck around with him too long, did Gunter Kunst and the rest of the management in Green Bay, but they are kind of on a path to making that right now. I'm going to go ahead and pick the Cowboys to win this because I think guys like Trevon Diggs and the rest of that defense, they take a step forward. They're able to shut down the Jedi Master that is Tom Brady week one. Although, you know, Tampa Bay adds Julio Jones to an offense that was already pretty potent with Chris Godwin last year. Some solid weapons there, Leonard Fournette in the backfield for Tom Brady, but I'm going to go ahead and stick with the pick of the Cowboys. I'm not going to talk myself out of it. That'll move us into Monday Night Football, which is the last thing that I got to make a prediction on, and I will have all of the games predicted for week one of the NFL season, and that is between the Broncos and the Seahawks. I think the Broncos are going to be good this year, and I think the Seahawks are not going to be very good this year, which is unfortunate because it's probably Pete Carroll's last season as a head coach. And Pete, one of the best to ever do it at all levels of football. So thank you to Pete Carroll for all he's done to the game, all he's done for the game. Good luck to him. But I think the Denver Broncos, with Russell Wilson at the helm, are going to be riding pretty strong. I know that's the motto with Russell Wilson doing that little let's ride thing, and that catching fire on social media everywhere. A lot of people making fun of the way that he was. Russell Wilson's just goofy. He's a goofy guy. And I don't know. He's a great football player, really talented. The Broncos gonna be freaking dangerous. So that's it for all of the predictions for week one of the NFL season. As there is now 1 second left on the clock in this Florida State versus LSU game, and Florida State is up 24-17, but LSU has the ball. And it looks like they could possibly have the ball down at the 2-3 yard line, maybe. So we will talk about the Chiefs offense here before we get the end of this game. All right, we're going to have a little bit of fun here now. We're going to talk about the Chiefs offense now. So starting up front on the offensive line, you've got Orlando Brown, Pro Bowler, on the franchise tag, playing left tackle, left guard, Joe Tooney, multiple-time Pro Bowler, all-pro type caliber player. Then you have Pro Bowler as a rookie, Creed Humphrey at center. Then you have Trey Smith at right guard. You look at right tackle, you're going to be putting in Andrew Wiley there, a guy who is probably fringe Pro Bowler if his pass blocking is any better this year. He's a very good run blocker. We'll see if he can take a step forward and step up in the pass blocking game, get the Pro Bowl nod. We know that's all about fan vote, though. So if he's just better in any area that's noticeable, the fans will probably vote him in. Then wide receivers, Juju Smith-Schuster and Marquez Valdez-Scantling to go with Mecole Hardman and rookie Sky Moore. At tight end, you still have Travis Kelce. Then you have Jody Fortson returning from injury. Most likely going to get some reps. We'll see about tight end too. I just mentioned Fortson. Of course, Patrick Mahomes, quarterback. What can they do? They can't do much. Then running back. You've got Isaiah Pacheco, rookie, out of Rutgers. I believe out of Rutgers. Pacheco looking very nice all preseason, all training camp. Ronald Jones making the roster. Clyde Edwards-Helaire likely to be the starter week one still. So there's a lot to look for in the Chiefs offense. Probably some guys that I'm missing, some names that I'm missing for sure. But yeah, it's going to be fun to see what Kansas City is able to do now that we have as deep of a receiving core as we do. We have 5 solid starters on the offensive line. We have possibly some defensive line depth now too. So it'll be interesting. Here is the end of this game. Looks like from the 2 yard line here, from the 2 yard line, Louisiana State, LSU, is going to go for a play from the shotgun. But they've called a timeout, and now they are ruining the end of this podcast. Uh, LSU scored. They scored on a 2-yard reception there. So it's 24-23 right now. Florida State does have one block on the special teams unit. It looks like they're going to try to tie it up and go to the college overtime. I'm a little upset about that. I wanted to see Brian Kelly lose his first game at LSU. Now we're going to have to – oh! Oh! Special teams fucked it! They fucked it! This is the live reaction! Oh, my God! What just happened? Did they block it?
Yeah.
Florida State just blocked it again! Oh, my God! They went X Games mode! They went X Games mode on them. Florida State went X Games mode. Oh, my God. Wow. Florida State fucks LSU week one. Wow. All right, well, that was the live reaction there to Florida State ending LSU's undefeated season at week one. Brian Kelly's streak at Notre Dame is 0-4. And, that's a good way to end this podcast. We got to talk a lot about fights earlier on. All of this is segmented if you listen to it on Spotify, which is, in my opinion, the best way to listen to it. But we appreciate our listeners anywhere and everywhere. Thank you all for listening. Make sure to follow @TalkMoreSports on Twitter. This has been John Newman with Roundtable Sports. I'm out.